Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, No Human Could Throw Books Like This.
Libraries are usually our refuges. I would love to work at a library with no other people there. But yes. You expect things like, you know, the smell of the book paper. I love the smell of books.
Yes.
The quiet hum of perhaps the HVAC. Maybe the rogue cart with a squeaky wheel with a librarian putting the books back on the shelves. But this isn't Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
We don't expect apparitions of librarians shushing us, or do we?
Well, this particular library is a mid-sized one here in the southeastern U.S., and while we've been asked to keep the exact location confidential, I do know where it is. It's not even a half day's drive from me here in Greensboro, North Carolina. And it's not really that old either. It was built in 2009, the same year that my son was born.
Right on the grounds of not one, but several, I think four, pre-existing yes. hospitals that were all torn down and built back in the same spot.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. And, I guess I would say here that historically speaking, the South anyway has a rich tradition of urban renewal in its massive medical districts. And if you look at the old charity hospital footprints in New Orleans or to the sprawling, constantly rebuilt medical campuses in Georgia and the Carolinas, even around right. me here in Greensboro, when you dig into the earth in those areas to lay a new foundation, you're automatically disturbing it in a way where so many people have been cared for, born, sick, and of course passed away.
Right. Well, you know, it makes sense to rebuild, especially in a urban area where, you know, space is limited. And yes. when it comes to hospitals, you tear that down, you rebuild it because everyone knows where the hospital is, where it's been, how to get to it in yes. an emergency.
Yeah. So
there's generational knowledge of its location. And obviously, at least when it was built, there's common sense about why it was put there in the first place. Any infrastructure right. that's sprung up around it, think about it. You have doctor's offices, you have medical building offices,
yeah.
pharmacies, cafes even. They all support the hospital when it was there. And they are preserved when you build a new hospital in the footprint of a pre-existing one.
Right. So that makes a lot of good sense. Now, in this case, we have one that was after several prior medical structures made into a library. Which, again, it's institutional, but it's obviously a whole different animal. So it doesn't seem like the kind of thing, though, that would necessarily stir up spirits. But this particular library's high-def security system has been picking up the detritus of an unseen but apparently disgruntled spirit from beyond.
And in this case, talk about ghost hunting equipment. We have a security system that makes this story so poignant. And we're going to talk more about that later after the dead letter. Well, Scott, it is your turn to read, sir.
So, the library where I've worked for over 15 years now is haunted. I'm convinced of it now. I enjoy watching some of the paranormal TV shows and quite a few podcasts, but it's always been in a, that's fun, but I'm not buying into this mindset. Now, I'm having to reconsider. There have been stories of staff members hearing voices during the evening shift in the past, even before I started working here. Nobody could ever tell me exact words, but they claimed they could hear talking. And it wasn't from anyone in the room with them. These were all reported in staff areas, so it was unlikely to be a patron, as our staff areas are isolated from public areas. However, we have a pretty wide open floor design, so you could always rationalize that it was just drafting in from someplace else nearby, like outside a window or being carried by vents. Now I'm not so sure. This incident happened on March 15th of 2022, shortly before we reopened after COVID. I've been thinking about this for so long now that I finally built up the courage to tell this story outside of coworkers, partially due to the amount of time that has passed and also due to being anonymous. A bit of background on the library. It's built where the old hospitals, yes, plural, used to be. The library itself is relatively new, with an opening in 2009. There have been four hospitals in the location the library is now. They just kept on demolishing the old one and building a new one in the same spot. That is not a story. That's absolutely 100% true and documented. The cornerstones from the four previous hospitals are embedded in the walkway leading up to the building. Now, maybe I'm crazy, but this seems like a very poor metaphysical design choice. There are unsubstantiated stories that the old surgery used to be where our administrative offices are in the building, and the morgue where our founder's room is. This particular story involves neither of those two locations, but right out on our main floor in front of our circulation desk. We have an L-shaped set of fancy shelves where we sell used and donated books off as a way to help fund our library friends group. Of all the places where you'd think something weird would happen, this wouldn't even make the list. Recently, we installed a new high-def security system with motion-activated cameras to replace our 2009 system that was, frankly, terrible, low-def, and trying to get any details on any video depended upon how good you were at deciphering pixels. We have a custodial crew that comes in to clean after hours. So in this instance, we had the cleaning crew wrap up at about 8 p.m., which was the last time the cameras triggered. I'm attaching a screenshot of the camera at shutoff and again when it turned on again. You'll see the solid vertical line on the time bar at the bottom of the image. This denotes no activity. The cameras triggered at 7:22 the next morning when a book flew off the book sales shelf and hit the floor. Our staff entrance is controlled by key cards. If anyone enters the building before 8 a.m., it triggers an alarm unless you have the override code and can punch it in really fast. No alarm was triggered, and the door log indicated that nobody had used the staff door before 8. Sadly, there is about a half-second delay before the detection of motion and starting to record. By that time, the book had already hit the floor. As you can see from the attached screenshot of the security camera software, we have a very wide-angle field of view. There is no way someone could pull that book off the shelf and get out of frame before the cameras turned on. You'll also notice that all the other books are untouched. If there was strong enough of a vibration to dislodge that book, it wouldn't have been just one, and, as you can see from the image, those books are wedged in there pretty good with bookends. They're not hanging over the edge of the shelf. So either something was extremely slowly pulling the book out for hours so the camera didn't pick it up, or it was just yanked forcefully. Given the distance the book cleared from the edge of the shelf, I'm going with it was pulled very quickly. So yeah, I'm convinced there is something going on. My next step is either clearing it with the library director so that I can spend the night or at least place recording equipment in that spot. I've tried using one of the Spirit Box apps on my iPad when I got there before everyone else, but it's clear those things are crap. I'm not going to get foreign words out of Southern ghosts. This might take a while, though, because buying proper paranormal gear on a librarian's salary isn't easily done. We haven't had anything else happen since, but I want to try to find out more.
The veil between the living and the dead is thinner than this commercial break.
So we titled this episode, No Human Could Throw Books Like This, as a nod to that classic Ghostbusters line from the original movie.
Indeed. You know, I think it was, you're right, no human could stack books like this. Which is a great line because, you know, it's at that moment in the movie where Venkman is still a skeptic, but we all know that's about to change.
Yeah, it's also right in front of one of the second greatest lines from the movie from Dan Aykroyd, his stance saying, Listen, smell something? So great. But when books really do fly off shelves on their own, well, folks, you have to reevaluate things.
Well, when anything flies off by itself, you need to reevaluate things, I think, especially when it's money flying out of your wallet.
Money does often have a way of wandering off, and not to be a skeptic, skeptic, but I don't think ghosts are involved at all. In fact, I think traditional big wireless carriers have their own spooky way of making your money disappear.
that is true. Although one time I think a ghost did leave a $5 bill under my screen door, but that's another story.
That's true. I remember that
story. Well, you know what? I like keeping my money in this dimension where I can see it. I don't like holding funerals for it. We'll put a stop to that, folks, by refusing to overpay for wireless just because, well, that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that.
I mean, my family got fed up with crazy high wireless bills, so we switched. The service quality crushes our old big wireless provider, and we've saved thousands of dollars over the past 10 years.
Yeah, Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle.
If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you.
Shop plans at mintmobile.com/DLO. That's mintmobile.com/DLO.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
Let's get back to unraveling this dead letter.
Well, thanks for reading that, Scott. And I like this story because there's a general feeling that's wrapped around this and the attitude of the coworkers there, because it's kind of that thing where it's interesting. Maybe some folks don't find this interesting at all or believe in it. But if you do believe in it and you find it interesting, there's a limit there because you still have to work there and you don't want to experience anything, especially if you have to stay there at night or late. And there's a cautious curiosity that happens with this, but I love that it was captured on camera. So you have some evidence, but not exactly while it's happening. You just have something, you could say, anomalous. So there's a little bit of doubt, which is always a great part of any ghost story. It's like, did that really happen? Was there an effect? But again, from so many people having worked there for so long, there's an understanding there. And our author tonight had a bit of a change of mind. I love opening of minds where it's like, okay, you know what? Maybe this is possible. And if it is, I want to find out more about it.
Yeah. And I think the thing I'm wondering here, and I've got an email out to our letter sender here who, again, wanted to stay anonymous and also keep this location anonymous. So I don't know if this person is going to let us share the security images. You know, especially with AI today, any image you want, it immediately doxes where it is or what it is or whatever. So I'll have to ask. But if we don't get the option to share it, what we can tell folks is, you know, this is a security camera up behind a desk. It's a wide angle view. It is a very high definition image. So it's a really good image for a security system as per the description. And you can see in the upper left corner these shelves that are described as sort of an L-shaped area where they're trying to sell these books. Mm-hmm. It's not a very large area. And there's a column, or what looks like a column, kind of obscuring a few of them. And there's not a ton of books there. But, you know, there's 4 or 5 shelves. You can't tell how high up they go. When you look at it, you think maybe you're seeing the top shelf. I'm not positive. But there is one thing I found in our research that I thought was really interesting. Coming into the mundane stuff, because I was like, what are possible reasons that books might fall off shelves? And I couldn't believe this. I came up with this thing called like archival swell or hygroscopic expansion, which I'd never heard of this. It basically suggests that books are made of all these hygroscopic materials, which is like the glues and the paper and the covers and everything. Right. And it's constantly absorbing and releasing moisture. Now, anybody that's had old books or and had them in an old house or a house, they've lived in a humid part of the country, knows this. You look at the book, even if it's lying flat on a table, it's a humid day, it swells up, it's fat, you know, and then on a cool, dry day, it gets kind of skinny. And so there was this idea, and of course, this makes sense to me. So all these books are packed really tight on a shelf, and a place like this, which is a more modern institution, it does have what they call microclimates. And the system can be turned off at night or turned down at night to be more amenable, of course, to protecting the stuff in the building, but maybe less ideally comfort for humans because the humans aren't in there. So why spend the money on that extra air conditioning? So there was this idea that was suggested that the books might be expanding and contracting. And if they're packed in tight on a shelf and they're sucking in humidity in the daytime and then it's drying out or the temperature's changing in the building while everyone's gone, that it could create like almost like a spring or a compression, like you're squeezing an accordion type thing, and squeeze books off a shelf. if they are trapped on the ends, by the ends of the bookshelves or bookends, and they're expanding and contracting. And when you think about it, if you have a whole series of books that are all roughly from the same era and equally sensitive to humidity and dryness, and a bunch of them are all expanding at once, it's like a building. It's like any system. It's like they could expand several inches or put a lot of pressure and in theory, maybe curve out and shoot some books off the shelf like a magician does with a deck of cards when they fling the whole thing out at you in a trick. I had never really thought about this. Like, this is the first time I was like, oh, here is a mundane reason that something might come off a shelf in this scenario.
Right.
But.
Yeah. Okay. Let's hear your
but. Looking at this picture, and when my butt looked at this picture, I didn't see a possibility for that because these books aren't stacked end to end. Now, our librarian mentions that they are tightly packed in some places, I think, in the story. I can't remember if they said that, but. When you look at them, they're just half full, and maybe they have bookends. It just doesn't seem like that scenario. But the other thing that you and I did was we took this wide-angle image that was sent to us of the books on the shelf and the books not on the shelf, which, by the way, is a very uneventful-looking thing if you're looking at this footage. You see this wide shot in the library. When you see the second picture after this thing's happened, you're like, what's different? I can't tell. It's a little bit of a Where's Waldo thing, right? But then when you look up in the corner over at the section that the librarian described, you can see a bunch of books on the floor that weren't there before. Here's the other thing that's interesting. It's 11 hours of an unoccupied building, roughly 11 hours from the time they went out. They've got an alarm system. They know everything. They got cameras. You can't come back in the building without deactivating the alarm, stepping into the building. So they have a record of everyone coming and going. Something happened between 8 p.m. when the cleaning crew left and 7:20 the next morning, which is when the camera went. And as it's explained to us, the camera doesn't pick up the first few seconds of motion, which is unfortunate because you don't see the instigation of this. But I know this because I have Ring cameras and they're the same way. You don't see the minute something gets there. You see it after a few seconds. So at some point, these books came off the shelf and onto the floor in this area. But we went in and zoomed in to the exact section of the bookcase where these books are laying on the floor. And we took a snapshot from the before and after of when they're on the floor and when they're not on the floor. And we A-B'd it really quick, which is, you know, well, post-production editing, photoshopping term for like going back and forth between the before and after of the two. And there are no books missing from the shelf behind where these books are laying on the floor. Yeah, there is no change, none. It's just a perfect representation. So the books on the floor came from somewhere else. And it's hard to tell where they could have come from because there are another set of shelves in an L shape there that are mostly obscured by a large column. If those books came from that shelf, it is really far away. That means they really came a long way to get where they landed, which is even crazier. So I'm not buying the humidity squeezing thing. It's hard to believe because the other thing I would think is with a building, and I've seen the outside of this building because I saw where it was and I looked it up on Google Earth and all that kind of stuff. This is a fairly modern building, which probably has a very well-controlled HVAC system. I doubt that they're letting the humidity go up and down that much in there. They may even have older books where that would be detrimental to them and to the storage of them. So I just can't really see that happening. I can see it happening in a not very well-controlled old house or an old bookstore in a seaside town or something like that. I just can't see that in this scenario. And I also cannot figure out where these books came from based on the images that the librarian sent us because they did not come from the shelf right behind them.
Right. But we were saying there may be shelves above the line of sight, right? So there may be high shelves, the books in the high tower, the books that are coming from a very high shelf that had fallen down because we cannot see any displaced books or there's no change in the two images, to be clear, right? So that's what you're saying is that the books have either fallen from a great height on a top shelf that is not viewable from this angle. Or are you suggesting they were apported?
That's what I can't figure out. I mean, they do look like they were thrown there because their pages are open. They're laying out on the floor. They look like they came from a distance, but I'm just looking at the close-ups now. And you're right. We can't tell if there's another shelf above the highest one that the camera is picking up. And let me look at that. I want to look at the very wide original shot here again and see if architecturally, if I can determine, I hope that we're going to be able to show these, but I don't know if we are. If we can determine how, you can't really because the camera seems like it's tucked up inside an alcove of sorts. So it's hard to tell how high up the shelves go where these came from. So it would have to be a top shelf situation, I guess.
Right.
Or they have come, they've either defied physics, because what we've got here, let's define it as a series of bookcases, which it isn't technically, but if you were to look at it as bookcases, there are one, two, three, maybe four, a fourth one that we couldn't see obscured by a column on the wall where these came from. And then on the neighboring L-shaped part of the wall, there's at least one other one, probably two. And that one seems to be more packed with books than the ones where this one landed. But, you know, just generally estimating the distance from the shelf that is obscured by the column to where these books landed, I am just, again, based on objects in the shot and everything, I'd say it's at least 3 or 4 feet that they would have had to go to get from that shelf that's obscured by the column. They only would have had to come off the shelf and fall straight to the floor, maybe 1 or 2 feet if it was these other shelves. But like I said, we AB'd these shelves and nothing is missing on them between the first frame and the last frame where the books are on the floor. So it's particularly puzzling. I want to see more, a lot more pictures of this area where this happened, which I am also going to ask for, because if we're not allowed to share them, at the very least, we can get more information so we can be more specific about it.
Well, I can see people viewing this or hearing the story. It's like, so some books fell off the shelf. That's it. That's all you got.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you look at that one thing, and as you were rightfully so trying to narrow this down with possible mundane explanations, I can feel the trepidation and again, the little bit of excitement, a little bit of uncertainty and a lot of curiosity from our author here of the story, in that it's one of those things where when you're looking at it this way, it's like, okay, well, you don't have it actually, you don't have any video of the books actually falling off the shelf. You have a before and an after. And suddenly now there's nobody there, I'll give you that, but now there's just books on the floor, big deal. If that had happened in front of you, where you're just a few feet away, that's a much bigger impact. But it's still, even when it's that obvious, you do wonder about it. Because again, that would sometimes happen to me. Very small, minor things. I've talked a little bit about this before, but the building that I worked at my last job, or one of my last jobs as a freelancer, a fairly new building, nice. Like this looks like a lovely, nice library. I would love to visit it. Yes. Quickly, the thing about that is that if you're going to do some investigation, what a much more comfortable and inviting place to do it than a burnt out, decrepit building. Because those are, I've been in those. Right. There's usually no power in them. They're cool. I do like that kind of vibe. But like being at Waverly and this, I'll take this as a much more comfortable place to do some ghost hunting, which I encourage. And I would love to hear any results about that. But in a case where that happens, remember, we've talked about this a few times. Folks, if you haven't seen it, The Bray Road Beast by Seth Breedlove and our good friends over at Small Town Monsters and Mark Matsky. Remember when they were interviewing, and this is like the weird thing where this happens. Like, this is a very strange story with a bunch of other things going on. We're also talking about repurposed land, things built over other things. But there's an interview, I think it was Seth, who's in his office with John Fredrickson, and he's the former Walworth County Animal Control Officer, talking about strange satanic things going on, people showing up from all over the world to a small Wisconsin town. Like, what are they doing there? Right. Why would they possibly be there? And from all walks of life, academics, police officers, professional people, lawyers, in this weird town doing weird stuff out in the woods and with a very dark vibe, and some of the horrible things that he's found involving animal mutilation, which he's had to clean up and investigate. And at that moment, a book, I don't know if you could say, flies off the shelf, but certainly is given some kind of seemingly invisible push off his bookshelf and lands on the floor while they're having the interview.
That's right.
And it's like, that's no breeze. That's no HVAC system with a leaky vent. Something seemingly pushed that thing off the shelf. It's like, okay, that was weird. And there's, what do you do with that? It's like, you just continue. And again, I don't think that, at least they don't mention it in the documentary, if that place is continually having things like that happen, but they both seemed a little surprised and freaked out. And it's a great moment in the documentary. Quick thing I'll talk about, because there is some mention and it's it seems to be important in the story is the fact that there were four hospitals in the same location. So I had to kind of think about that. Like, oh, you mean the same footprint on the city block? A hospital was torn down, rebuilt. Same cornerstones are now incorporated into the library in the walkway, I believe. Yeah, it's like just a reuse, not spolia in a way, where old ancient building materials or just old building materials are repurposed and ground up or whatever, just used in the newer construction, is that you're on that ground. And for whatever reason, like you keep rebuilding it. And as we know, hospitals, theaters, churches, and libraries are notoriously haunted with a lot of things going on because there's a lot of human interaction in there, especially with hospitals, pain, trauma, births, deaths, sickness, a lot of extreme emotional energy, a lot from the family members that have to go there and visit. And it's kind of soaked the grounds, you could say. So when you build a library there, yeah, I'd expect it to be haunted. But then again, I believe in those kinds of things. It's not impossible for me, where he's like, okay, I love the comment where, I tune into a lot of paranormal TV shows and quite a few podcasts, and it's always been that, that's fun, but I'm not buying into this.
Then, right.
Until, like I said, that's the point where it's like, oh, okay, some books fell off the shelf, big deal. And then it happens to you, and it's like, okay, that was unexplainable. It's not just the books. It's everything else. It's coworkers describing voices that seem to be coming from nowhere and shouldn't be there. I think there's a lot of other things that are going on that people don't openly discuss there.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah, and even our author was hesitant to even write us about this. But it's like, this kind of sounds weird, and I had to change my mindset. I'm still wondering about what this was and how I'm going to proceed. But it's so many years have passed since 2022 that time kind of heals that wound. The other thing I was going to quickly mention, talking about, so that was the Bray Road Beast. Great, fun documentary and pretty creepy and chilling from our friends at Small Town Monsters. Look for that. And narrated by our good friend, Lyle Blackburn, of course, and with Linda Godfrey. Bless her. So that's a good one to see. I was going to say another, if you like hauntings at libraries, the other one I was going to mention was, I've mentioned his oeuvre many times, but we've not yet made contact with him, but I do like his series of films because they're unbelievable how good the evidence he gets.
Yeah.
But this one's kind of creepy. So this one is from, his series of film. Director Stephen Shippey goes by the handle Prozac because he used to be a rapper. That was his rapper.
Right. Yes.
Stephen Shippey. Yeah. So he's got a whole series of haunted places in Michigan. And this one is called A Haunting at the Hoyt Library. And it is from, 2015 is when it was released. Just a little bio here says, for years, the Hoyt Library has made headlines as one of the most haunted locations in the entire Midwest. Finally, a documentary film crew was allowed complete access to investigate the numerous claims of paranormal activity. What they captured on audio and video will leave no room for doubt. But basically, rooted in downtown Saginaw, Michigan, the historic Hoyt Library has guarded its citizens' history and lineage for over 125 years. So, it's quite a grand, really cool looking library. But just talking about the evidence they get, they set up a night vision camera, just static, in apparently one of the rooms. It's like an office room. And from what I remember, the computer turns on by itself.
Oh,
and then the office chair starts to rotate.
Oh, that's right. You showed me this. I remember that now.
Creepy. If this is not faked, which I don't have any reason to believe it is, it's pretty good evidence. It's like, okay, that's undeniable. You know what I'm saying? That's not a breeze. A breeze doesn't turn on the computer by itself. And then I think they capture an apparition kind of walking through the stacks, which looks like an old lady librarian.
Right.
And then she's one of the resident ghosts. So that's a good one if you want to see some library ghosts. But that was, any case, I'm not surprised at all. Wherever this library is, and I would love to go visit, it sounds like it's a good place. I hope that management lets our author here do some investigating. Before I forget, there are cheap and easy ways to get some detection here. One, and I'm going to plug them because it's our friends, but Roger and Jill had from Streamside Productions. Roger has developed a digital phone version, at least for Apple iOS, that acts as an EVP recorder, which he's called the ER70. Cheap and easy and effective. I've used it myself, got some very strange things.
Yeah, it's
it cool. works. It does work. And I will say, you know, yes, it is kind of inspired by our infamous DR60 Panasonic recorder. I will say the difference between the two is that I've used both quite a lot now, and the DR60 will pick up a lot, but it's often unintelligible.
Right.
Whereas the ER70.
But not always. But
No.
You have some Class A's on the DR60.
Oh, yeah. And then I guess the timbre of it, the texture of it, makes it even creepier. It's all angry and scratchy sounding. Yeah. I've got some very clear ones with the ER70 in the Canton, at Monster Fest last time we had that.
Right.
Monster Fest 2 in the balcony of the Canton Theater.
At Ohio.
I played that one before where it's like, is there anybody here with us? And somebody says, Anthony. And of course, that's none of our group. And it was when no one was talking. So in any case, you can use that. There's just look it up online and start doing some investigation because.
Also, I get that you were put off by maybe getting foreign languages out of the device you were using. But here's the thing about that. You don't get to pick where a ghost comes from. Yes, you may have had bad software. You may have a bad spirit box. But on the other hand, it's not like there's never been foreign speaking people where this library is. And I know because I know where it is, and I won't go further in that. But it's entirely possible that that kind of was working.
Yeah.
There are people who were convinced that our most famous file, File 10, had Spanish in it.
Yeah.
And somebody was saying, give me a peso.
Right.
Our friend Josh Lewis, who is a little bit of a medium or what have you, who has a recorder similar to the one we got File 10 with, thought that portions of File 10, which I do not listen to anymore, but it's on our YouTube channel, from the Sally House, the voice said when we walked in, and me specifically, I said, look at his money, you know, and then it said, give me a peso, give me a peso.
Yeah.
I had rented for that trip a Cadillac Escalade.
So right.
I rolled up just for fun because I'm kind of a car nut and I'd like to rent weird cars when I'm traveling. And I was like, I've never driven one of these. So we rolled up in that Escalade and went into the Sally House and it was like, look at his money. Give us a peso. That's what Josh thought it was saying. Anyway, you never know what you're getting. And a lot of times it doesn't make sense until it does with those. But there's no question that there's fake spirit box apps out there. The reason that we can stand behind our friend Rogers is because he's basically a savant inventor type. And he got a DR60 like ours and took it apart and figured out how it worked and then converted that into code and made that software.
Right.
So that's why it seems to work anyway. So
there's a lot of fun things you can do if you're serious about, and you don't have to spend all night. You really want to be there. The whole purpose of a lockdown is just to know, to be certain that you're the only person in the building.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Although I'll say a weird phenomenon, because I think it is a little bit of that trickster thing, is that you could be at a notoriously haunted location that's old and decrepit, and you'll be there all night and not much will happen. And then once you start to pack up the gear, that's when stuff happens.
And here's the trickster and paranormal aspect to this too. This camera, I found while you were talking and we were looking at stuff, I went online to look for more interior shots of this particular library than what we got from our listener. And I did find some, and of course, it's a reverse angle. I can see the security camera that this came from in the angle.
Oh, cool.
But it's diagonally exactly opposite of the corner that we need to see to get more information here. And there's not doesn't seem to be one from that other corner. So I'm going to reach out to the librarian and the listener. There is time before this episode airs, so maybe we'll hear back and can put an addendum on it.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to tell you, Forrest, that it does look to me like in this particular part of the library, the shelves are only 5 shelves tall, which means we are seeing the top one.
Oh, really? Okay.
So when we're A-B-ing between the two images, the before and after, it seems like maybe those books did not come off the shelves that they're right in front of, which means they traveled, as far as I can tell, a much further distance to get where they landed.
Interesting.
It's clear that they didn't come off of those immediate shelves, which is where you think they would have come from, which to me seems like they may have come from much further away. And when I say much further away, I don't mean like 50 feet or something, just 4 or 5 feet versus like 1 or 2 feet off the shelf and onto the floor in front of them. Because that most logical shelf that they should have come from, there's no changes in it between the before and after here. And it's interesting to me about the security camera too, you know, undisturbed for all those hours. And then it happens in the morning. It is like something's trying to get your attention. I get it. You've been working there 15 years and you've got a little bit of skepticism about it. Maybe you don't want to hear that something's going on at your place that you're spending probably the majority of your life every day. Like if you're working a 40-hour week at this place. So I, you know, I get that. But like this also traditionally, I could say this from the history of the show, these kinds of things are way benign compared to the things that can happen to you.
well,
from the other side anyway. So.
Yes. And this, well, I hopefully it's just a bookworm, a past bookworm.
Folks, most times we record these in one sitting, but we did hear back from our librarian and felt the need to post a quick update. Some of the questions we asked were answered. One thing is the shelves are not taller than what we thought they were. They are 5 shelves tall. The librarian was equally surprised to see no change in the shelves directly above where the fallen books were found. They actually did an A-B thing like we did in Photoshop and were pretty shocked to see that. It was not something they had thought to do before. We could not get permission to share the images, but we have seen them ourselves, including the security timestamps that back up the story. There's 2 emails from the librarian that I wanted to share with you. One is, as an update for you, since I sent this, we had a new maintenance guy start and we ran into each other as we were coming back into work not more than a week later, and he made the comment, unprompted, that the ghosties were up and about. Mm-hmm. I had mentioned nothing to him about my suspicions, and this was only the second time I'd spoken to him outside of meeting him when he got the job. Right. I asked him what he meant, and he said that he gets here before all the other staff so he can get any important repair work done that would be interrupted by staff or the public. He told me that he hears footsteps in the hallway outside his office early in the morning, and there is nobody there. He also says that he has a brand new toilet flush sensor in his office. Forrest, you're going to see where this is going. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind that flushes after you step away from doing your business, that triggers on its own as if someone had passed in front of it, which is a story we've told before about the magic eye, and I've personally experienced in relation to another long story that I'm not telling here. So... The only thing that the librarian thought, because this person is still kind of a skeptic or wants to believe the mundane thing, but still is providing these details that other people that work at the library think it might be haunted. They did suggest, because those books are for sale, sometimes people might take them off the shelf and look at them, and then rather than put them back where they got them, they put them up on the top.
Which, yeah.
But they did point out that that was kind of high up. So then maybe there's a theory that it was up on the top and it was kind of not very well secured to the top of the bookshelf, and somehow it fell down onto the floor. If it didn't come off the shelves that were right behind it, though, and I did ask about the distance to the other shelves, those books would have had to travel a pretty good distance, like 3 or 4 feet, to get over there. There's no other source for them in terms of that.
Right. Did they respond, though, saying where they thought the books had come from, where they were supposed to be shelved?
They did not know, and they reached out to the IT person, who was the person that was alerted by the camera system, and had put them back or had to clean them up. That person could not remember, because I also asked what the titles were, because I was like, is there a message?
Oh,
but
maybe.
They couldn't remember that, and also couldn't remember where they put them back to.
Okay.
So the only thing the librarian said was, well, if they didn't come off that shelf that we have all looked at now and the shelf looks the same before and after, then they would have had to come from the other shelf that was further away, which was a section of children's books. Hmm. But that was 3 or 4 feet away.
Well, again, that clarifies, so I'm glad we asked and got answered, because the only scenario then I can imagine that's mundane is, as we said earlier, all those books were for sale. So that's their kind of a nice sales section there, the retail sales department in that little bookshelf area. And what they had said as well is that, you know, sometimes people will pull some books off a shelf. I've seen people do this, also having worked a little retail. What they'll do is, well, I'm not going to buy this right now, and I got other stuff to do at the mall, so I'm going to hide this shirt I like in the size I want.
And come back.
In the rounder, deep down, or they tuck it into someplace. Yeah, people do that. So maybe somebody had tippy-toed and put the books on the very top shelf. So on top of the shelf, not actually a shelf in the shelving cabinet, but just on the top, and it was too tall.
Or maybe on top of other books, although we didn't see that.
And so, like I said, it's kind of tall up there. It's a height that the person wasn't quite reaching fully and got the book. So over the halfway point, the halfway tipping point, and they remained up there. And then maybe I'm doing the skeptical debunker angle here. Of, you know, people are walking by all day or for those hours. And I know it's overnight, though. But the vibrations cause the books to fall. And that's why you see 3 or 4 books that are out of place and not any conspicuously empty, you know, spot on the shelves where they were sitting. So that's it. But I don't buy into that too much, because that I think that would have been noticed, or that was the case. And also, like we said, this occurred overnight, so where there's not a lot of foot traffic.
Yeah, it was 8 p.m., and this is documented by the equipment, 8 p.m. when the cleaning crew left, and these fell off the shelf, and the camera picked up movement, but after the movement had started at 7:22 a.m. the next morning, and no one was in the building yet.
Well, now you're talking poltergeist action. Remember this?
Well, yeah, there you go.
We filmed a
there
toy car that moved. It took 5 hours, and it moved 4 inches, and he goes, just like the Craig T. Nelson's, huh? Really? Oh, yeah. Well, you want to see something?
Take a look at this.
And then he opens the door and things are flying around.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, it's possible. But what we were talking about earlier is the distinction, which is ridiculous to anybody who doesn't believe any of this, whether if it was an apportation or a shove of some kind of unseen
right.
hand.
There you go.
So
you go.
Fascinating. But yeah, glad they responded. Thank you so much. They didn't have to do that. I love when people do respond because they have really no reason to. But we're glad I got some answers on this one. And I hope that somebody sticks around and gets more evidence. Also, like I said earlier, that a lot of the people who do the maintenance when the building is quiet, not that stuff isn't happening during the day, but as we know, spirits do seem to be more active in the nighttime hours. And when it's quieter, you notice more stuff. If that library had been packed with people, there's books on the floor, like, oh, just somebody knocked these over. Okay, I'll just go put these back. Probably no one would have noticed unless it happens right in front of your face. And then it's total freak out time. I was talking earlier about the building manager. I love talking to janitors, cleaning people, and security guards at night because they got some of the best stories.
Well, folks, it is funny how a single half second of missing footage can completely change the way you view the world. Our listener here for 15 years working in the same spot, walking past those embedded hospital cornerstones, probably not thinking too much about them, but now the history is happening in the building, maybe. Thank you so much for sending your letter into the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Faris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Caricia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bowler. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.